The Off the Ball Podcast Network. OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
You're very welcome along to this morning's Shot Clock, where we've got the big full forward Kieran Donaghy taking on the full back Gerard Gilroy this morning, as ever. Three topics of debate, changing up the scoring of the debate a little bit this morning. If you make a positive point, you will hear this sound. And if you make a really crap argument, you're going to hear this sound. So the scoring should get interesting a little bit later on. We've got three topics of debate, then we'll get into Kieran's free throw, and then into the picks, and we'll have last week's scores from the picks as well. If you've got any forfeit for the lads, whoever loses in the picks or the debates this year, tweet us at Off The Ball. Andrew McLaughlin last week was suggesting that the lads do some commentary topless, whoever loses, which I think is a fantastic shout. Right, let's get into topic number one, which is around the idea of judging people by the amount of medals they've won. So Michael Brick Walsh, who is here on the screen beside me, obviously hasn't got an All-Ireland medal. Are we judging his career by the fact that he's never won Liam McCarthy? Ger.
We in Irish sport place far too much store in the fact that you have to have got over the line to become a great. Now, so at the moment, everybody talks about Michael Brick Walsh as being one of the great hurlers of his generation. But in time, that's going to fade. The same way it did with Johnny Doyle, for example. No one talks about Johnny Doyle as one of the best footballers of the last 20 years, when clearly he was absolutely, at his peak, one of the best footballers over the last 20 years. But he gets completely forgotten about because Kildare didn't get over the line in 2010. Similarly, several of his teammates were similarly talented and are out of the conversation. It's just a stupid part about Irish sport where we measure things exclusively in medals.
Kieran.
Yeah, I kind of agree. The simple answer is medals should not define your career. I think there's moments that happened in Michael Brick Walsh's career, John Milan. There's a host of players from different sports that have iconic moments that will be always remembered by them, their fans, their family members, which will make them a legend in their own right in that town, county, team, province, whatever it is. Having an All-Ireland medal, having a national championship, whether it's the NBA or Super Bowl or anything, like, should not define your career. There's great players. You look at the NBA, you look at the Charles Barkley, the Patrick Ewings. Are you going to tell me that their career is not defined by them having a national championship, an NBA championship ring or a Super Bowl? They're absolute legends in their own right. It's a very tricky one, because when these players look back, like, you do everything to win an All-Ireland, obviously, as a player. It's what it's all about. And that's all you think about when you're playing. But for me, and certainly when you get to the end of your career and you start looking at things retrospectively, you start looking at the training sessions, the memories, the time spent, the teammates, the friendships, the bonds made. That's actually more important. But when you're a young guy and you're in the squad, all you can think about is that ultimate goal. And I think if players don't reach that ultimate goal, they will feel right then and there that it's not a success, but in time they'll look back and they'll be happy with their
own. Would you have felt unfulfilled, though, if the first year you come in, you win Footballer of the Year, you win All-Ireland, and you go back-to-back, I think. So if you hadn't won any more than those two, at the end, would you have felt that you didn't fulfil your potential because you only had two All-Irelands?
Yeah, but I think that's because of the team I was on. So I was very lucky to be from a county like Kerry that was very competitive, that had an unbelievable team. But if Kieran Donaghy was playing with a lesser team, people wouldn't necessarily have heard of me. I mightn't have won All-Irelands, but that should not have defined what I was about. The way I played the game, whether I played with Kerry or somebody else, the fact that I was playing with Kerry helped me win All-Irelands. Should that make me any better than guys that played with lesser counties that were much better footballers of me? I don't think so. I think there's the Matty Fords, there's countless guys that maybe didn't get over the line winning All-Ireland that were absolutely unbelievable players and legends in their own right, and not having a medal shouldn't define them.
You make the point about Barkley and a couple of the others. The thing about the NBA is that we can specifically register exactly how well those teams did, because we have stats that back up the quality of the performance, their shooting percentage, all that kind of stuff. We need to get to a point where Johnny Doyle's performances are like their standout. They were so sensational. He carried the team, and his leaping ability, all that kind of stuff. We need to just be able to quantify things a bit more in Irish sport, I suspect, as opposed to just the eye test. That lad had a good game today.
Yeah, but it's a bit trickier in Irish sport because guys in the NBA, the Barclays, they could move, they could transfer, they could go to the Rockets and try and win a championship. They could go here to try and win a championship. Johnny Doyle started with Kildare, played 20 years, an absolutely unbelievable career. He didn't have the option to jump on board with somebody else that was more competitive to give himself a chance to win that championship. So it's a bit different. You look at the Premiership, you look at a guy like Gerrard, played an unbelievable career, never got there. If he'd have signed for Chelsea that time, he would have ended up with four premierships.
Making me doubt myself. Stevie G, not as good as Kenny Dalglish because he couldn't drag the team over the line.
He slipped.
That's probably
exactly.
He slipped over the line, which probably would cost him in the end. But it should not define him, because if he'd have gone to Chelsea or somebody like that, he would have won the leagues at that time. But I think his iconic status is even more so the fact that he stayed, and he stayed with the cause, and he tried to win it, and he just didn't get over the line. But he will be always remembered as an absolute icon in Liverpool.
I think in 10 years' time, he's going to come down as the recency bias changes. That this team of players who actually have started to win things with Liverpool, I think they're going to, although he did obviously win a Champions League, so maybe
it's... Not that he win a Champions League, he actually put them on his back for about 10 minutes, like Roy Keane did out in Juventus.
That is a lot of hot takes coming in there. We're nipping talk so far, we'll get to the scores at the very end. We're moving on to rugby. Is this weekend last chance saloon for some of the Owl Lads for Ireland? Of course, they got hammered by Wales last year. If they got hammered again this year, do we just accept that we're entering a period of transition, that we're not able to challenge for a championship right now? Kieran, you can lead us off on this one.
Yeah, I think, I think in Ireland, as Joe rightly said earlier on about GAA and championships, I think here we're also obsessed about retiring fellas as soon as they get to 30, or they're not good enough, or they're old, or they're over the line. I had it for the last 4 or 5 years of my career. I think the average age of the Irish squad currently is 26 and a half years. Four out of the Six Nations team have an average age of 26 years old. We're not old. We're the exact same as four of the other teams. You look at some of our starlets coming up, Robbie Henshaw, Jordan Lamb are 22, Henshaw 26. We've got loads of players in that under bracket. You have your guys that are older. You have your Sexton, who's obviously an unbelievable leader, and he will continue to lead the team as a 34-year-old. But you have Conor Murray behind him, who's 30. Peter O'Mahony is still 29. All of these fellas are talked about because Ireland's form isn't great at the moment. We start looking at the easy thing. The easy thing is a few of these guys are older. Oh, let's push them on. Let's bring in some of the younger guys. Are the younger guys actually better players than these guys? I don't think so. You stick with your guys. You find out a way to get your form back. You find out a way to get your players playing better. That's up to Farrell and the management team. Stop looking for the easy option and start pointing at these fellas who are over the hill. It's like the same old story when a team loses in All-Ireland, loses a big game, they were tired, they were overtrained. All the simple, easy excuses that people pick when they're not actually the truth. The fact is the team didn't perform in the day, the other team were better, and that's what's happened to Ireland over the last few games. They're going to have to find a way to dig themselves out of it. Oof.
Argue against that?
Well, a couple of things. The best thing that happened to the Owl Lads in the Ireland team at the moment was the fact that the World Cup draw is going to be made this November, and so every single match counts for World Cup seeding in the next 4 years. Suddenly, we're actually on a four-year cycle, and we should not be on a four-year cycle. It's far too early for us to be thinking about that. So the Owl Lads should have one more stay of execution, and it is this Six Nations, and it is unfortunately going to end up being this November. But if, for example, Joey Carby had been fit, wouldn't we all be crying out for Joey Carby to be starting at out half? Look at what France did. They put a 20-year-old in at out half against England and they won. This guy is now going to be the absolute future of that team because he was given his head, a 23-year-old scrum half. And what a halfback partnership that in 4 years' time is going to be at their absolute peak. The French can build for a four-year cycle. I totally understand that because they are going to be hosting the World Cup and they need to get players in. We don't have a playing pool that big. But at the same time, if we weren't fighting for World Cup qualifying points, then this game for Peter O'Mahony this week and next week were going to be absolutely massive because he has to remind everybody that he's as good now as he was when he was captaining the Lions 18 months ago.
Yeah.
Last chance saloon, I think, the last six unbelievable years
that Peter O'Mahony has been put in. Let's call it spade a spade. He's been unbelievable for the last 6 or 7 years. The last few games or the last year, he hasn't been at that peak. Are we writing off what he's done? Like the World Cup is 2023. It's a long, long-term goal. We've three more Six Nations to go. We've a Lions tour to go. They've so much to play for in between then. I think you can certainly get guys in here or there, but you have to stay with your best guys. Your best guys are the guys that'll be on the field to win the game on Sunday. That's what Andy Farrell's picking. He can't pick guys because of a four-year thing that's happening that far away. 2023 is too far away. You pick your team, the best team to go out and win on Saturday.
Right, okay. There is, I can tell you in the negative points, it's 3-1 against Kieran at the moment. So Joe's talking a little less shite at the moment, but Kieran might have a few more positive points to his name. We'll tally them up very shortly. This is a photograph of Andy Moran. Billy Joe Paddon was on Off the Ball on Monday night. He was talking about how Mayo footballers, if they're exceptionally gifted, tend to get brought away from the goal so they can get involved in more play. Are inside forwards born, not made, is the question. Andy Moran is one of the few who managed to slip through those cracks and managed to make it as an inside forward. Gerard, do you want to start us off on this one?
Yeah, so this is essentially the fact that the big and best and most successful counties in Ireland know that when you have a superstar, you stick him in the inside forward line. You think back to DJ Carey, you think back to Henry Shefflin. They didn't turn them into centre forwards. They didn't turn them into left half backs. They didn't say, oh, you need to go back there and see what the ball is going to be like going into the full forward line. They're like, you need to learn how to be tough. You need to learn how to win your own ball. You need to learn how to be at the end of a scoring move, and you need to be greedy. You need to develop a little bit of ego and actually turn into somebody who, when the game is on the line, we're going to go, it's your job to get us out of this. That's exactly why those counties, like Gooch, Gooch was never a centre forward, really. At the end, maybe.
That was a bad comparison there, though. Inside forwards are you can say that inside forwards
are
Gooch
was a corner forward the entire time. When he was at his absolute peak, he was 100%, shut up.
He was a corner forward. He was a corner forward. And people say he was a born corner forward.
Maurice Fitz.
Gooch, they were not born corner forwards. Maurice Fitz was started as a half forward. He wasn't born a corner forward. Corner forwards are born because they go away and they're actually put the effort into their game. They're actually made. Corner forwards are made. The Peter Canavans, the Stevie McDonalds, the Cullum Coopers are made. Why are they made? Because they put in more effort than anybody else when they were young. They practiced harder when they were young. They were the go-to guys to. And that's important to tell kids that, because kids can't look at a Cullum Cooper or Peter Canavan and go, oh, these fellas are just born inside forwards. Every inside forward is actually made. You look at Bernard Brogan when he came on the scene, was a wing forward, and all of a sudden he was the main corner forward on a team that won the five in a row. So that's the whole thing about being born is just an easy thing to say. People are born to play the game is too easy to say. It's important to tell kids, to tell people that you can be that guy if you put in the effort. Cullum Cooper was the guy that was out kicking the ball every single day. He wasn't born to be a corner forward for Kerry. I think it's 80% that you're made and about 20% of it is you're born, and that's just athletic genetics that gets you to the point where you can make it to the elite level. That's the only thing I'd say now.
Look, I agree. 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration. I absolutely 100% agree with that. But the point here is that Mayo have for too long took their best players and stuck them in at half forward, stuck them in the midfield, stuck them in the half back line because they want their half backs to be the players. Kerry and Kilkenny and Cork, when they see somebody who has talent, they're like, okay, absolutely, you're going to have to do the work, but you're going to be an inside forward because that's where you can do the most damage. For example, if Donegal had turned Michael Murphy into exclusively an inside forward and the entire county's reason for existence had been to get the ball to him in the full forward line, I suspect they would have won more All-Irelands than they've won.
I think the Michael Murphy point just sums it up. And plus, Ger, you're talking about football 20 years ago, 10 years ago versus football today. It's not as easy as just stick your guy inside. It's the last few years, it's very easy to say stick your guy inside and he's back with the blanket defence around him. He can't get any ball. Of course, teams had to look at getting their players out the pitch. But that's a different thing to players be either being born to be a corner forward, an inside forward or not.
Conor McManus started as a half-back at Monaghan. This is the disease that afflicts all of Gaelic football. Andy Moran was playing out the field when he started. Put your best players close to goal and tell them your job is to score. Your job is to learn how to deal. Get the guile to get a bit of space, get a bit of separation from the blanket defence. Your job is to be the killer on our team. Everybody's like, oh no, we're going to be a nice little halfback. I'm going to run onto the ball and a bit of space is going to be easy for me to be showy. It's hard. It's very hard to be Andy Moran.
I think McManus, the example of McManus is exactly my point about inside forwards are actually made more so than the barn, because McManus was obviously a solid enough forward when he was coming on the scene, but McManus is a guy who actually went and put in the hours and hours to be great. That's what he is now. He wasn't great when he came on the scene, because if he was, he wouldn't have come on at half-back. He would have been juggernauted straight into corner forward. They weren't exactly born with loads of forwards at that time, but I think he's a prime example of a guy that was made by himself in the lab.
Right, give him one more point there. I'm going to tally these up during the free throw. The free throw here is about
another
Irish basketball.
Fix.
do you want to have one more effort?
No, off you go. Go on.
But like, I mean, that the Gooch rampage on him not being a centre forward could be the thing that costs you. I will top him up in just a moment. Irish basketball, obviously been a big week, Kieran. They've come out complaining, and I think a lot of people will get behind their complaints about not getting the funding when they badly needed it, especially when you look at what happened to the FAI this year. Let's look at this in the context of what's happened internationally for Ireland. I think it's fair to say that some of the international teams have underachieved, but that's because they've come from a place of not even having an international team due to some of the funding issues. What's your take on all of this?
Yeah, look, you know, the statement released by Basketball Ireland, you know, it had to be done. Firstly, I want to say, like everybody, I think, in the country, especially in Basketball Ireland, nobody wanted to see the FAI hung out to dry or go to the wall. That's obvious. Football in this country is just too important. It's a fabric of a lot of parts of the country, so you couldn't let something like that happen. I think people are... looking at this in Basketball Ireland as is unfair. They're right to say that. Granted, it was a different time. It was back in the recession of 2009. But for people in Basketball Ireland to be told when they had their mishaps, and their mishaps was the funding that they got, they were supposed to put it into buying stuff, getting venues up to scratch. They were putting it back into Irish teams to allow teams to be actually able to play at the highest level. That was their punishment. Their punishment was they had to pay back 1.5 million, their money to build a national stadium out in Tallaght to develop it more, improve it. That money was taken off them, $500,000, which was a huge blow to them at the time. I was on an Irish team when I was 15. My mother had to raise £1,000 for me. She sold lines in the hospital as a nurse. I'm sure she had all the nurses and doctors broke up inside there. Selling lines, I was walking around the towns, getting out to people, getting out to everybody in my estates, trying to raise the money to get on the plane. And it was a real thing that if I didn't raise that money, I wouldn't have been able to play for that Irish team. I was the captain of the team, but if I didn't raise the money, I wouldn't have been able to be going. That's back in 98. So Basketball Ireland has been grossly underfunded, not in the last 10 years, but I would say in the last 30 or 40 years. The sport was massive in the 80s. It was great. It was on national TV, but still underfunded at the time. Everybody, the league was going so well because they funded it themselves. I think Kieran Shannon wrote a great piece yesterday. It's the third largest sport played in Ireland, participation-wise. It's number one in PE schools in Ireland. The new government, and when the new government comes in and looks at this, we have to support basketball as a sport in Ireland more. It gets nothing. That's the facts of it. It really gets so little on the ladder. You know, it's up to us in News Talk, and we've done a great job over the last year promoting the game inside here. But everybody has to promote the game. The games, the scorelines of the Super League teams have to be called out. Irish teams, and he wrote a great piece about Clare Rockall, that Irish team that came along the scene. Their team was pulled from underneath them. Just when they were coming to the stage where colleges could have been looking at them, it was a huge time in their careers. And Basketball Ireland had to fold everything. They had to double registrations. They had to find out a way to win money themselves, or to get money themselves, to keep the actual sport going. And that's why I think it's grossly unfair. Can they do anything about that? No. No. But the new government coming in can have a look at this and say, OK, Basketball Ireland took it on the chin badly, took a big knock. If it was a heavyweight fight, he would have been reeling, maybe falling down, maybe getting an A count. But they got back up. They've got the game back in a great place. It's a brilliant game for boys and girls to play. I can't... I had my own daughter, Lola Rose, down to the St. Brendan's Academy the last day, 4.5, about 40 kids inside in the hall. Such a great game, can always be played during the winter months. But we have to hope that the new government get on board, learn from the mistakes of the last government about the lack of funding, the lack of support that goes into it. The Irish team staying in hostels, having to pay for themselves, staying in people's houses. I stayed in Joey Boylan's house, my great coach at the time. He got his pizzas every night. That was one part of it. But kids now have to go up. They're staying, 7 or 8 kids are staying in people's houses. I think someone coming back in Kieran's article yesterday, someone's coming back and they tatted it up that it cost maybe 10 to 12 grand, not only to send their kid to an under 15 Irish team, but to go and watch them when they actually made the tournament. That's not on teams, Irish teams. If you're representing your country, you should be funded.
Well said. I think that concludes the free throw for this week. Back to the shot clock again, and the scores are in. You're not going to believe this. I thought it was a tie at one moment, but actually there has been a winner by just 1 point. Jer, you scored 7 points this week. You made 13 positive points, but you scored 6 in the negative column. Most of which came from that Gooch argument. Let's call a spade here. Kieran, you finished with 8. So Kieran takes the debate trophy home this week. You didn't score as many positive points as Jer, but you scored 2 less negative points.
Even though we didn't have the points last week, I still won last week as well.
You did start a forward for like a wet week at the end of his career. You did start Leary's game. He started a corner forward. He killed him. He was at absolute peak as a corner forward.
I will say this, Kieran. You did put Robbie Henshaw into the coming up bracket. One of those young ones to watch.
He's 26.
Robbie Henshaw. So you lost points on that. Right, on to the picks. Last week's results from this, it was 2-2 in this last week. So we're going to give you 1 point if you get the correct outcome, and then 3 points if you manage to get the correct scoreline or margin of victory. Jer, you picked the Chiefs. You got the point for that. Kieran, you picked the 49ers. Jer and Kieran both predicted Ireland to win. None of them got the correct scoreline. And then Jer, you picked Mayo to beat Dublin by a point, which didn't happen. Kieran, you picked Dublin by 3. So 2-2 from the picks last week. This week, as we can see, Ireland against Wales. Kieran, who have you got?
I've got Wales, unfortunately. I think they're just in a better place at the moment. It wouldn't surprise me if Ireland nicked this one in a real tight game, but if I was to put my bet in and these punishments that are coming for myself or Jura, if we lose this at the end of the National League, I think is the first call. So I will go safe and go with Wales by between 4 and 7.
Give us an exact number.
29-23.
Sure.
Wales are going to win by 3 points, and the score, I didn't have a correct score for this one, but I'm going to go with 16-13.
Game of the weekend in the Allianz Football League is Donegal against Galway. Ger, who do you think is going to win this?
This is a good question. Where is it?
Letterkenny.
Okay, Donegal.
Yeah, Letterkenny.
I'm actually going to go with Galway. I think Galway should have won against Kerry last week. I think they have more impetus under a new manager to prove what happened last week was a bit of bad luck on their point of view. They should have been comfortable. They should have seen out the game. They made a few mistakes late, and you can't make mistakes against Kerry and Tralee with that crowd behind them. And I think Galway are going to go up with a point to prove this weekend and be a bit more desperate than Donegal.
Is this the battle to see who's actually number 3 and 4?
I would have thought
so, yeah.
In your power rankings?
They can win the bronze medal this weekend. It's all on the line.
Beyond
in Letterkenny.
Power rankings.
This man, Odi Ighalo, we don't have a third match to look ahead to this weekend, so we're going to choose how many goals Odi Ighalo is going to score between now and the end of the season, over or under 4.5 goals, Kieran?
I think he'll be over. I think he'll actually get about 6 or 7. Just because he probably, like everybody that scores, everybody scores in their debut, so he's going to score in his debut. Get on that bit, firstly. And I think he's going to get a few more between now and the end of the season.
Sure.
So I'd say over.
So I'm going under. I don't think that he's going to see as much game time as everybody thinks. I think that the notion that somehow he's going to fit seamlessly into this Man United team, having just come back from China, where, fair enough, he's banging in the goals, but like...
Nobody fits up front for this United team, really, bar Rashford, so...
That's the thing. I'm taking the under on this one.
I just think he'll get it because I think actually if they went away and spent 100 million on some great striker, he's a fellow who mightn't get 4.5 goals because that's the way it's worked out for United over the last number of years. So I think taking a punt in this lad is going to work.
All right, good stuff, lads. More from the Shot Clock, same time, same place next week. It is Thursday mornings, OTB AM. Check out youtube.com/offtheball and tweet us at offtheball for any topics you have. And again, some suggestions for the forfeit for the loser of the debate and the picks at the end of the season. Although I'm having Andrew McLaughlin's suggestion of topless commentating.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio. That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.